Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Ricky Darling, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Crowe, and Getty, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Friday is a split between Calling It the Dark Sudan and Break On Through. Saturday, join Afasiana and Babla as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. Monday, the split between Hearts of LNP with Victoria and New Chapters in the Black Lace Diaries with Mr. M and Mistress Frost. These shows are designed to shoot and color outside the lines with rich raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope of expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, my co-host Cameron, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hey, Pam.
Hey, Rex. What's up?
Nothing much.
Same old, huh?
Yes. It's going to be a hot summer.
You're breaking up a little bit there, Rex. You got...
It's going to be a hot summer.
Well, hopefully that'll clear up. Looks like we have a great lineup of poetry tonight, inspired by quotes from the French artist Francis Picabia. So I can't really tell you much about the guy other than that he was French. He was an artist, and I like his quotes. So.
Okay. So you like random quotes under the influence of the Green Angel? The Green Fairy?
Yes. Well, could have been, that the Green Fairy. I like the trait. I like Green Angel. I've never heard, that called that. I'm blanking out on the word right now. What is that green stuff, that Green Fairy stuff?
Absinthe.
That's it. I've never heard it called the Green Angel, but I think that's really cool.
Sure, they thought it was a Green Angel at first until we got down into the bitter end of it and found there was a fairy there waiting in the wings.
Yeah, because fairies do tend to make a little bit more trouble than angels. That's for sure. Let's see here. Let's go ahead and get the show started. And up first, I have Freedom by Diane D. And we have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
Freedom by Diane D. Mothers in the shadow of my mind, replay like the drips of a leaky pipe, lost in the same looping nightmare, squirming between wake and sleep. Freedom seeps through the cracks, like fire falls into a weedless valley. Thoughts flit like sideways spiders. Brain cracks like a ripened coconut. Chaos leaves footprints in my blood, and my obsessed cleans and cleans, until my fingertips bleed flesh flakes, but my mind cannot be wiped sterile. Free is not once the chains are broken. Free is not just fleeing from bondage. Free is not when you evaded captivity. Free is if you allow yourself to be free. Free for animals is to escape physically. Free for humans is to escape mentally. End poem.
Great read, Diane. Thank you very much for the sound card. It was much appreciated. All right, Pam, what you got?
Well, first of all, that was a wonderful read that she did. You know, I like when a one-word title speaks volumes, and I think the choice of the word freedom works really well on that. And she wrote to the prompt, the quote, "A free spirit takes liberty even with liberty itself." I really like the imagery of freedom seeps through the cracks like fire falls into a weedless valley. Thoughts flit like sideways spiders. Brain cracks like a ripened coconut. Free is not once the chains are broken. Free is not just fleeing from bondage. Free is not when you evaded captivity. Free is if you allow yourself to be free. I like that she goes into not just physical freedom, but the freedom of the mind. And to me, there's even this idea in here of the freedom of speech, you know, the liberties that we have, and the idea that we don't always have to be in a physical chain, in a physical cage to be a prisoner of something. So just a really strong write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I'm going to go with something a bit different. From the opening thoughts, mutters in the shadow of my mind, replay like the drips of a leaky pipe, lost in the same looping nightmare, squirming between wake and sleep. All right, she hits off with the idea of freedom. So obviously it isn't freedom. The bite in this is OCD, something that worms and niggles and preys and doesn't let go. And then again, the thought freedom seeps through the cracks like fire falls into weedless valley. Thoughts slip like sideways spiders, brain cracks like a ripened coconut. The idea that once that touch of freedom crawls in, everything kind of lets loose. But then the angle of chaos walks in and then hits on the real end of the OCD itself, the obsession to clean and clean just to hold a touch of freedom of the mind itself, because you're looking for a way out past the what's already roiling in your head because it's seeping out. And that warrants the thought of maybe opening up and saying something that you might regret in the long run because it shouldn't have been said in the short term. And the fact that you do know that something like that is coming on kind of hits on that notion of the free at the bottom end of this, where the is to escape mentally the idea of getting outside that prison you've created, well, you might have created for yourself, but you were locked into because of the angle of OCD. And it doesn't happen. It has to be that sort of, like you see a monk, you got to count every day thing, or you got to rap on the door three times before you can equate a touch of happiness. So there is that note to the mind giving you that open-ended sort of terror to letting something loose that you don't really want to. Nicely done. All right, then. All right. Where are we going next?
All right. Up next, we have Appreciating Precious Hesitation by Versus Goliath. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read, please.
Appreciating Precious Hesitation. Her words were like strawberries and cream, the delicate touch of bittersweet company. Tongues dance along double entendre's meaning. Fingers trace edge of slightly revealing dress seams. If touch had taste buds, her skin would be red velvet cake, smooth textured delight, ribbed with soft, supple ermine icing, moved to take a bite of thigh, in good taste the line needed, slicing. Evening of sweaty conversations, rocking to our own music, releasing the meaty carnivores, king and queen of physics. Sentences would run on for hours, our teachers would be sick. Please forgive abhorrent creatures staring at stars, nude on hassock. settling in and telling stories, whispered secrets and allegory, kettle boil, shared Earl Grey, lips past Fruit Loop flavoring, gentle irises plead, please stay, crisp essence, I wasn't leaving. A glowing campfire between two spirits, like children at a sleepover, never tired, showing trophies off, discussing parents, future, keep energy wired. The sky gradually hides its freckles, replaced by a gradient of spectacular pink, red, orange, purple, and other colors. We watched the transformation together, thinking we'd be friends forever. And poem. All right. There you go. That was, oh, and he took a good taste is as tiring as good company. Okay. There she be. What'd you get out of that one? I'm gonna make a pick.
Well, I like the imagery and metaphors throughout. Very creative. Evening of sweaty conversations rocking to our music, releasing the meaty carnivores, kings and queens of physics sentence would run on for hours. Our teachers would be sick. Please forgive abhorrent creatures staring at stars nude on hassock, settling in and telling stories, whispering secrets and allegory. Kettle boils and shared Earl Grey, lips past Fruit Loop flavoring. I like the lips past Fruit Loop flavoring. It makes me think of somebody wearing that flavored chapstick. And, you know, I think to me it reflects really well on the prompt and the idea that it's not about good taste or bad taste. It's about personal taste. You know, whatever you find that, you know, moves your spirit, whatever kind of company you want to keep that makes for an interesting evening. I really like how he brings the use of color in here and the use of physics. And as you mentioned, the word transformation, you know, I think to me there's certain conversations that uplift us and transform us, and it doesn't have to be the same for everybody. So wonderful, right?
All right. I like that. I'm gonna go up with the idea first engagement, because it hits on that note in the second stanza. What was it? Sentences would run on for hours. Our teachers would be sick. Please forgive abhorrent creatures staring at stars nude on hashtag. The idea of first engagements, conversation, the central attitude that he rolled out at first stanza, the thoughts with, the words were strawberries and cream, delicate touch of bittersweet company, the double entendre's meaning. The thought whether if touch had taste buds, her skin would be red velvet cake, smooth textured delight, ribbed with soft stuff of ermine icing, moved to take a bite of thigh. In good taste, the line needed slicing. That digs well into the moments of exploration. And then the thought, second one, hit on that angle of conversational tone. And then again, this telling of stories, thought with a hitting the evening with our Earl Grey tea, the Fruit Loop flavoring, that was a nice touch. That was different. And so was the back end of this. The sky gradually hides its freckles, replaced by a gradient of spectacular pink, red, orange, purple, and other colors, which you've got sitting at the top of that one picture. And the thought of the transformation together, going from one angle, you're already friends, then it's thinking we'd be friends forevermore. But there's a slight note of open-ended melancholy. Once you transverse that angle of friendship into lovers, does it last as friendship? So it is a bite at something special with a little nuance at the back end of, does it last? All right, back to you.
All right, up next we have Speaking My Piece by S. Sharp. And it goes like this. Wait, is it? Oh, yeah, it is my turn to read. Okay. My art speaks the truth of today, mimics the greatest speeches of our times, time, tone, depth of thought, pacing, sometimes making children smile. Other times these thoughts burn my arse literally. Put on blast, my arse speaks politicians' truth. In a pinch, it can read your mind. Put words to your thoughts. Next to speech, all you have to offer. At the dinner table with distant relatives, a mumbled welcome permeates the air. Most people's thoughts in the form of a gas-given voice met with the same uneasy smile of acceptance as if you had spoken them yourself. End poem.
Bravery, Pam, and I took the quote. My arse contemplates those who talk behind my back. Well, your arse might contemplate, but it's also talking behind your back. I like that. This is a funny piece. And from the outset, the obvious note was on that first line. Said all that needed to be said. My art speaks the truth of today. I like that thought. And throwing in the angle of, yeah, making children smile. And literally put on blast. My art speaks politicians' truth. In a pinch, it can read your mind. Put your words to thought. Yeah, this ain't for shit. And here you go. Hey. Let me add a little bit of sparkling aromatics to the conversation. You all know how it goes. Hey, you got to accept because, after all, everybody's doing it. And if you don't, then you know what? I like that back end of it. Well, literally, uneasy smile of acceptance as if you had spoken them yourself. Yes, it is. Some things are nothing but pure shit, and you've got to offer up the spillage that requires the motif. That which is being verbally thrown in, so you might as well offer up the anal end of things. Hey, here's a conversational note. Yeah, have at it. All right. What about you?
This was a fun read. I like had some great bite to it. I really like sometimes making children smile. At times these thoughts burn my ass, literally put on blast. My arse speaks politicians' truth in a pinch. It can read your mind. I like how this gives the idea that, you know, the world is full of arses and, you know, they're all got opinions and they all stink. I really like the ending too, met with the same uneasy smile of acceptance as if you had spoken them yourself. And so clever write and very well done.
Come on. Tis the right angle. If you're going to offer up a verbal flatulence and oral diarrhea, you get met with it from reality.
Yeah.
Well, where are we going next?
All right. Let's see here. Up next, we have Papa Dada's Dance by Eric Svensson. And we have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
Papa Dada Dance. Libertine, oh libertine. Let's parry party shine. Dine upon wondrous exploration. Grey gravitas begs exfoliation. Layered onion rings lunge. G-force, freefall plummet plunge. Do the dada dance. creative minds love to parry party prance, dervish wool through uncertainty, paintbrush and pen tarry not, parry party in search of destiny. Libertine, oh libertine, hop, skip, jump out of the box, but there is no box to contain, restrain inquisitive creativity. Art's early quantum field pathfinders triggered society's rigged spiderweb controls. Reality chop suey, sliced, diced, and dissected. Do you see what you get? Circumspect creativity asks, do you get what you see? Heady hopscotch, impressionism, pointillism, dada dance, pen and paint picadillos of an adventurous French avant-garde painter. Libertine, oh libertine, forever spring, season of jubilant renewal, busy bee artist buzz, sought creative pollen, yeah, there and elsewhere, castanet celebration consecration, fearless conquistador sought new land. Do you see what you get versus do you get what you see? Patty pliable reality exposed through artistic archaeology, forever spring, pen and paint prophet led me back to Canaan, end poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you very much. Very much appreciate the SoundCloud. I like this three angles sort into the libertine, oh libertine, to address each one, but a little different play on the voice itself. Let's parry party shine for the first one, hop, skimp, jump out of the box in the second, and then forever spring, season of jubilant renewal. But the idea of paint hanging on the thought of different mediums, paint, brush, and pen, tarry not, parry party in search of destiny, and then pen and paint, peccadillos of an adventurous French avant-garde painter, and then forever spring, pen and paint prophet led back to Canaan. The idea of growth, the idea of looking into and beyond the picture itself, because it does offer the thought there, a touch of pen and ink, paint, and almost a kind of sepia tone as part of the mix to let the rest stand itself out, the embodiment of the body itself through changing faces. I like that. And it was the thought of a heady hopscotch, impressionism, pointillism, dada dance. And the question that he dropped in here was nice. Do you see what you get versus do you get what you see? The idea of understanding the picture itself as it is, but looking deeper into the picture to see the point drawn through it, because it does offer a myriad of flavor, and the body is encompassed, or the two extra bodies encompassed through the face of the person in the picture itself, which is cleverly drawn out. Not to mention the fact that you can make out 1, 2, 3, 4 separate images of two faces and two bodies itself, which does offer the thought of do you understand the meaning, or is it just the picture that is pleasing to you? So the idea of finishing out this the thought of the pliable reality of an artist's mind to offer up that which he sees within his mind eye, and then lays it out on the canvas or the board or this particular medium that he's chosen to dig into, which is nicely expressed. Thank you very much, Eric. All right, let's move into the next one. go with Meat for Blackbirds by J.C. Anders. I write these words with scarlet letters, roadkill Jesus. Meant for blackbirds, soft mosquito kisses, warm itchy, swollen wounds, scratched till I bled, a soul renewed upon devoured desires. Reality is a bomb. Boom. Yesterday is over. Tomorrow is gone. Two-fisted jerk-off. Forgot to come stuck in a corner. Feeling so dumb. Want to be famous. Grab daddy's gun. It's all about you. This urge to run. Please. Run. Dawn bubbles red. I know it was wrong. Cool morning stars. Blinded by the sun. Red scribbled lines. Make no sense at all. Roadkill Jesus. That's what I've become. Meant for blackbirds. Worthless crumbs scattered. And JD took the prompt. Pain has its reasons. Pleasure is totally indifferent. Oh. Okay, pain. Pain has its reasons. Pleasure. All right. Conversational tone between the thoughts of pain and passion. Sometimes people actually mix the two as a medium for themselves. But anyway. Pain in this one offers up the thought right up top with scarlet letters, roadkill Jesus, a sainted note, meat for blackbirds, soft mosquito kisses, warm itchy, swollen wounds. I like that thought as the idea of words that can be used in a sense to bite at one's inner mind and burnish the soul, so to speak. Scratch to my blood, that it hits on the idea of how annoying it to the point where it niggles you into the point of a frenzy, so to speak, a soul renewed. So he's been offered up roadkill Jesus, the sacrifice, a soul renewed upon devoured desires. Reality is a bomb. Yes, reality can be that little touch of juxtaposed position, which exposes that which you think as opposed to that which is. And again, yesterday's over, tomorrow is gone. Two-fisted jerk-off forgot to come. Stuck in a corner feeling so dumb. Want to be famous? Grab daddy's gun. It's all about you. This urge to run. Okay, back into the sort of the two-fisted jerk-off. Forgot to come stuck in the corner feeling done. That's a nice thought to metaphor in the angle of pulling the trigger, so to speak, but not getting the job done. Yesterday's over and tomorrow is gone. It's on the idea of looking forward to something, remembering what was back, but not really living in today. So that's been left out of the equation. And the thought, the need to run from oneself kind of hits hard. Red scribbled lines make no sense at all. Again, back to the roadkill Jesus, the same sacrifice. That's what I've become. Meat for blackbirds, worthless crumbs. But it's scattered. So there's a notion of maybe the idea of that which is being offered up as the artist itself sees no real thought to ingestion and proper angle of dissection within it. So there's no real angle of it's no real, it is easily nuanced angle, but the angle of maybe getting a decent thought from anybody out of it. It's almost as though I'm offering up my thoughts, my voice, my words, and getting nothing in return. And the back end of that that quote, pain has its reasons, pleasure is totally different. The fact that he's living in the pain and getting nothing pleasurable out of it. Nicely touched upon, JC. Thank you very much. All right. Let's see what we got. This ought to be interesting. I like the title, EJ. Thank you very much. Crazy Cat Lady by EJ Cole. Every cat I see makes me smile. Each knitted newborn kitten pile, each dot of a nose, each spindly tail, every whisker, wire, and ear tuft sail. All the woe-limbed eyes I oft meet, colors teal, olive, and winter wheat, in cozy homes or on the street, no one I'd be unhappy to greet. Some are blind, some are old and deaf, some are mean, some have little meat left. So I fetch for them some broth and fish, set out on a freshly polished dish, to watch his feral instincts soften, keeping a safe distance and caution, until they finish off their first real meal in 6 days, then suddenly reveal sweet songs to me, regaling chimes, fond memories of better times, gracious boons of renewed gratitude, through their kind demeanor, truths tattooed. And EJ took. Let us never forget that the greatest man is never more than an animal disguised as a god. And she kind of played on the angle of, she wanted to play on the idea that cats are gods disguised as animals, and we often treat them as lesser beings. Well, there is an idea behind that one, EJ, because cats are definitely their own creatures. They are very loving. They will leave their scent on you, unlike many things. And they will beg to you, sing to you. They will even need you in their place, but they do it all at their own behest. If you want to do it for them, it's that little, all of a sudden you've got a little bite or a scratch on your hand. It's all at their whim. So the idea of the cat being a pet is kind of loose in its own terms, because I think we are more pets than the cats, because they get to deliver us to the point where we actually tend to them, their needs, as opposed to them giving it back on the other end, like dogs do, the sort of that faithful friend. Cats are definitely a totally different animal altogether, and they work on their own timeline. I like this for the offering, that little note in the opening, each knitted newborn kitten pile, each dot of a nose, each spindly tail, every wrist of wire, and ear tuft sail. A great thought to kittens. And you know what? Kittens are those little precious bundles of joy, and you wish that they wouldn't grow up from that point, because they look so damn cute. But like all little things, they do grow. And then you get on the angle of those you meet on the street, the blind, the old, the deaf, some mean, some with little meat left. Then that thought of offering up something a little bit more. I like that thought. So I fetch for them some broth and fish, set out in a freshly polished dish. It does make that kind of angle of offering up something to the cats, and like they would have done at an Egyptian temple. Cats were revered. And then the back angle. You can watch those feral instincts soften up, but you still got to watch yourself. And there is something that you do get out of it in the long run. You get a friend. You got someone who knows you. You'll get someone who will come and play, but will also tell you, hey, on my terms only. Nicely written, EJ. I like that thought. Crazy Cat Lady. I thought it was going to go a little bit differently, but that walked a different line of thought, which was nicely done. All right, then. Let's see.
Hey, Rex.
Yeah.
Oh, I just wanted to let you know that I am back.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'll go back to posting links, and I'll go ahead and comment on EJ's poem. So
right.
I really and thank you for that. First of all, I want to say that I really appreciate that Eric and JC both wrote and were inspired. I too like the direction, you know, that EJ took in this. You know, the idea of Crazy Cat Lady definitely throws you off. That makes me think of, I was actually, when I was living in Austin, Texas, there was this lady who had a bunch of cats, like live cats just run around all over, like you expect a Crazy Cat Lady to. And I knocked on her door to ask her if I could have a kitten because I was looking for a cat at the time. And her response was, no, I collect them. And that was just the oddest thing. But on a technical level, I really like the AABB rhyme pattern, but how she doesn't stick to an exact rhyme, but in like some places she has a near rhyme, which I think works really well with the meter and flow of this. And I liked what you had to say about how cats have their own personality and how they'll love you and take care of you, but on their terms. And that is so true. You know, I've always regretted that I, over the years that I've had cats, that for various reasons I've had to give up. You know, I like how she brings in their different personalities. And that she reminds us that for throughout history, you know, how they have been, you know, almost that they have been revered as gods. I really like Then Suddenly Real, Sweet Songs to Me, Regaling Chimes, Found Memories of Better Times, Gracious Boons of Renewed Gratitude Through Their Kind Demeanor, Truth Tattooed. She's done a wonderful job of capturing the regal and playful personality of so many cats. So very well done.
All right, then. Where are we going next?
All right. Up next, we have... Indecision by Garden Delight, and it goes like this. Distress winds around me like a constricting snake, stealing my joy, a thief with no conscience. Pieces of me seem disjointed and floating free. Assembly into a cohesive whole escapes me. Sunshine seems reserved for others. It avoids me, missing the entrance into my soul. I wither without needed soul light, sagging further with the hours. Time's passage is irregular, fast then slow like a rubber band released from tension. I stand in one camp then switch to the other. Decision time and I have no answer. Who has stolen it from my lips? And poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And... Garden took, pain has its reasons, pleasure is totally indifferent. Like the one we just did with JC, this was a bit different on the back end level because this points to a fence sitter. This distress winds around me like a constricting snake, stealing my joy, a thief, no conscience. Piece of me seems disjointed and floating free. Assembly is a cohesive whole escaping. Then the bite of the thought of a missing entrance to my soul, with or without soul light. So it kind of hits on the person who is, along with the title indecision, the fence sitter. You sit so much time with, I like that thought from you, yes. And then someone offers up something, I like that thought from you, yes. But there is no real common notion to what you yourself think. You spend so much time hitting on the thoughts of others and how they come across that you don't bother. And it's been such a long time that you've actually worn yourself into the corner of you can't make a decision because you depend on everybody else to show you the right direction at the thought. And everybody else is differing thoughts and opinions and wants and needs walk within your mind, thereby denying you the thought of your own mind, which is kind of hard, especially when you sit there. I stand in one camp and switch to the other. And the offering there is, you know what? The hell with either camp. Make your own. Then you have a voice. All right, Pam, what about you?
Great observations there, Rex. You know, I did like the idea of I stand in one camp and switch to the other. It really makes me think of the phrase, you know, riding the fence. And the idea that you can't ride the fence, you have to take a side, but the indecision of which side to take. And I think, you know, oftentimes you'll see people make point, like there'll be a debate going on in the world, and you'll see people make a point, and you'll be like, okay, well, that makes sense. And then somebody else makes a point, you'll be like, okay, that makes sense. But, you know, to me, there's this idea here of learning to think for yourself, but how oftentimes it can be very overwhelming. I really like pieces of me seem disjointed and floating free, assembly into a cohesive whole escapes me. I thought those were a very emotive lines. It almost feels like not really knowing who you are. It feels kind of like the idea of even though she wrote to the quote, pain has its reason, pleasure is totally indifferent. And I like that, but it also makes me think of the quote about freedom. And almost like, how do I say this? I guess for me, those lines feel like the idea of someone who has finally been given freedom or felt like they've been given freedom and doesn't know how to express their new selves. So just a really thoughtful write all the way through and very well done.
Well said. What we got next?
All right. Up next, we have all right. Grabbed it and now heading back to Late Night Poets. And we have Pain Helps Us Grow by Darkened Auras. And Rex, go ahead, give that a read.
Pain Helps Us Grow by Darkened Auras. Anyone can feel the pleasures in life, soft touch upon their skin, wandering hands and lips, sparking a fire within. Pain, though, has a purpose to help us see the truth, harden skin and make us stronger, stemming from our youth. You could feel great about a job offer, then be crushed into the ground when someone else swoops in and steals the glory you thought you had found. The pain may feel like life's cruel joke, your bad luck, nothing new. But maybe, you know, just maybe, they needed it more than you. Pain can make a writer, a poet, or a show. It can also create survivors. Pain helps us to grow. And again, pain has its reasons. Pleasure is totally indifferent. Seems to be the favorite thought of tonight. All right, Pam, what you got? Are you mutating?
Yes, I was. And can you comment on that one first?
Yep. All right. That opening stanza sits on itself to the thought of pleasure, and then the bite with pain, though has a purpose to help us see the truth, harden skin and make us stronger, stemming from our youth. Now that brings me to the thought of what we've done with society the last, I don't know, 30, 40 years. Everybody's a winner. Nobody's a loser. The idea of being, everybody gets an award trophy for being there. The idea of winners and losers is that idea of hardening skin to make us stronger. Because once you get into real life, you teach your kids, hey, everybody's a winner. You all get what you want anytime you want it, is telling their kids a lie. All those participation trophies are garbage because all they've done is teach two generations that they only have to show up. They don't have to do the real hard work, which is a sad, shitty message to deliver unto the youth moving forward, because once they get out in life, they find out losers do come, and those who don't work towards the winning angle are the losers, and they don't get a participation trophy. If they don't do the work, they get fired. They don't get to move up the ladder. So the idea of everybody gets a trophy is a piss poor thought to actually real growth. And the back end of this, pain can make a writer, a poet, or a show. It can also create survivors. Pain helps us grow. There's a whole lot of truth in that, which really needs no explanation. The idea of understanding the note to winning and losing, especially when it comes to that, is the epitome of thought. If you've got somebody who's really, really good at a young age, and you're teaching them they're always a winner, never a loser, even when they lose is wrong, because you take the fight out of them, the need to want to get better because they didn't win. That loss needs to be upfront in their mind, of working to working better professionally and on a level that makes them grow, but also to the point where it helps the team out itself. And that is the idea between wins and losses, the thought of understanding pain and loss and pleasure in winning. So I like this for that reason. Nicely done, Darken. Thank you. All right, Pam.
Yeah. Well, you know, Rex, I really like what you had to say, and I have to agree with you. You know, living in a society nowadays that offers up participation trophies really misguides youth into what adulthood is supposed to be like. Also, I really think another disservice that comes about from the participation trophy idea is that young people aren't able to discover their individual strengths. I still am not, but I was not an athletic kid, an athletic teenager. That was not where my strengths were. And, you know, if I had been encouraged by giving trophies just for showing up, and I thought that was my strength, or I thought I didn't have to put effort into it, I would have never, I'd be less likely to really care as much about things that I do have an interest in or an ability to in, like writing. And I think that's an unfortunate consequence, you know, of the participation trophy society that we have begun to live in. Another particular, I liked this all the way through, and the ones that really stood out to me were the third and fourth stanza, where it talks about, you know, getting a job offer, then the pain felt when somebody else gets the job. And then she ends those two stanzas with, but maybe, you know, just maybe they needed it more than you. You know, it's like the idea of, you know, it's that idea of if you're going, say, like going to have a picnic and you're praying it doesn't rain, but then it does rain. Well, the rain was the farmer's prayer. You know, are you... The farmer's crops needs rain more than you needed a sunny day, you know. And that's the same kind of thought here, is the idea that, you know, yeah, it's bad luck, it's sad, you know, it's disappointing that you didn't get that job. But I like that she points out that things happen for a reason, and sometimes the reason is because somebody needed it more than you did. And just beautifully written and very well done.
Boy, they actually worked harder for it. Because if you breed mediocre, you shouldn't be surprised when it becomes mediocre.
Are you talking about the somebody else getting the job, or?
Yep. If somebody else got the job, you might have, you were into the running. It might be that they got it because they earned it with a little bit more hard work and what the company was drawing a line to. And the angle there of, in the thought is, if that's the case, then why aren't you working that hard? So, like I said, mediocrity, when you breed mediocrity, you shouldn't be surprised when you end up as mediocre.
Yeah, well, and that's definitely a good point. That could be the reason. Yeah, I mean, I was focusing on what she had given in the poem as the possible reason. But, you know, there's obviously, you know, multiple reasons. It could be that the person was better than you and you're not rising above mediocrity. It could be, you know, that the person is, the dating the boss's daughter, or, you know, friends with the boss, or, you know, it could be that, you know, they just came on when the person interviewing them was having a better day. You know, I mean, there's definitely multiple reasons why a job isn't offered up to somebody. And definitely there are people, as you said, Rex, that, you know, are without a doubt more qualified for a job. So, yep.
Hey, what's next?
All right. And up next we have Jealous of My Neighbor's Life by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. There's something inhumane believing in perdition, a forever of fire and torment due to 80 earthly years of sinning. Is your head spinning too? A merciful God, a wrathful God, how American to be granted options. There's something unnatural, trusting in balance to bring us stability. Man is such an ego whore, his own demigod. As his abilities fail, so he promotes bullshit. Needing to believe in something, blissfully unaware that believing in something does not make it real, never has, never will. Religion and propaganda love exploitation, especially when penned in ranting cursives and sent as a letter titled Submission Through Fear. My detailed handwritten exposition, only meant for eyes stupid enough to think there, exists in eternal damnation waiting for me simply because one day I was jealous of my neighbor's life and, oh yeah, desperately wanted to fuck his hot-ass wife. Hell to pay. Hell yeah. End poem.
Great,
okay.
Man.
I feel like Luther read that, but that's okay.
Well, Julie,
thank you.
Last three lines kind of spit out something a little easier. Oh, hell yeah. Desperately wanted to fuck his hot-ass wife. Hell to pay? Hell yeah. It does kind of bite at the whole idea of the angle of how dominant, persevering, and overbearing that the thought of religion can be at times. When the funny thing is, Christ was offered up as that touch of freedom and renewal. The one person, the one image that says he pays for all your sins. Now you are cleansed, so to speak. That's my general impression of how it went anyway. But the thought that it is pounded into us of how such things can be wholly taken into the realm of uses as propaganda to beat into our heads how this, that, the other thing are such sinful attitudes, and you will be going to hell. And like she said, religion and propaganda love exploitation. Both. And everybody uses something to promote their angle of thought when it comes to something they want to imbue within society, whether it's political, or whether it's, hey, I got the latest soft drink. None of this, none of that, and certainly none of the other, but it contains everything that you shouldn't have because it's bad for you. Despite that, they make it and promote it into with a load of bullshit. It doesn't matter what it is. Everything can be taken out of context to the point where all of a sudden it becomes reality, but isn't real. So the idea of eternal damnation, that was, I believe, that was written in later, just like hell was, just like other things were. It's something to bind one wholly into the moment with no thought past the original idea and teachings to begin with. And the fact that we've gotten to the point where everything has to be done under these big auspices, these big crowns, with people spewing all manner of things to get you to do it, is that angle that she's got right here, submission through fear, the idea of control. It's the natural order of some to want to control the rest. And it is the idea of walking outside of that that comes with a hell to pay. Hell yeah, you got to walk outside propaganda in order to actually live. Because if you don't, then you're stuck being one of those plebeian sheep mewling in the gutters, wondering why things are going bad. What about you?
Yeah, I thought this had some great bite all the way through. I do have to say, I do think, spirituality religion has become too commercialized. I really particularly liked where she says, a merciful God, a wrathful God, how American to be granted options. I like the bite and the thought that, God is to be marketed and however people need him or her. I like where she meant, this kind of makes me think of, when you have like the Jehovah Witnesses or the Mormons come knocking at your door to hand out the pamphlets. I feel like submission through fear, especially when penned in ranting cursive and sent to me as a letter entitled Submission Through Fear. There's this whole idea, of getting people to believe what you want them to believe, controlling their thoughts through their emotions, especially fear. It makes you think of the way like cults work. I did like the humor the in the ending. I thought that was very cool. One of the I had a thought. Okay, let me see if I can regain it. You know what? I can't. And the worst part is it was like you said something. And then what you said gave me a thought, and now all of a sudden I can't regain it. But I guess for me, this really gives thought to how, like I said, commercialize and so say, oh, I know what it was. Yeah, okay. So you were commenting on how the idea of, the thought of how everybody needs something to believe in, and about belief in general. And the ironic thing to me is you'll hear people like, say that people who have a personal, like religious belief you had mentioned about being sheep, are sheep. To me, I feel like there really isn't that much original thought, and that no matter what you believe or don't believe, you have faith in something. Like if you believe there is no God, you have faith there is no God. if you believe that the world was created by a Big Bang, you have faith that all the circumstances have been so perfect in these instantaneous, or not instantaneous, but in these moments. This whole idea of the Big Bang Theory is in itself a faith, because it cannot be physically proven. So it's always been an intriguing idea to me on how, you know, there's so many different concepts of religion and how people will not be open to the various concepts other than their own. Definitely some great attitude in this rite, and very well done.
It reminds me of that hurricane that went through Louisiana and broke all the dikes and levees and flooded the city, so to speak. And that guy in Texas, Joel Osteen, I think that's his name, who just built that new temple, didn't want to house anybody, and nobody could understand. But a few years later, they find out he stuffed millions into the new walls that were built in that church behind the drywall. And he didn't want nobody to know, discover, or find out.
Oh, wow. That is a really cool tidbit of information. So that's awesome.
Well, it's no worse or no better than what's his name, who got caught with hookers. I have sinned, and he cried on national TV. Or the other
God,
one.
Oh, God, I remember that.
The other one. I need $10 million, though. God's calling me home. As though your people aren't giving you enough money, you're going to bilk them for $10 million more? Or God's telling me, hey, God, please take him now. He's not worth it.
Wasn't that like Jim Baker?
Oh, Jim and Tammy Faye. They had the $500,000 doghouse complete with air conditioning and toilet out in the backyard.
Oh my gosh, isn't that crazy?
Oral Roberts was the one who wanted $10 million. Oh, God's calling him home, and the other one, I can't remember his name in a moment. But he was a portly fellow crying on national. God, I have sinned. Yeah, God. And the wealth of other ones who've been doing it over the last few years.
Oh, they're not the only ones.
Hey, you know what? It's tax-free. I can do with it as I see fit, along with that nice 12-seat limousine I get to drive in every day. Oh, God. So much for the thought of... Or have you to take care of the poor constituents? Well, I visit them. I pray over them. I give them thanks unto the Lord. And you go home to a $2 million house and say a half a dozen people staffing you to cook, clean, and do your laundry. Yes, you don't do a goddamn thing for yourself except rake in and steal money.
Amen to that. Yeah, well said there, Rex. Oh, man, now I got the picture of Tammy Faye Baker's eyelashes in my head. God, those things were scary.
All right, what's on next?
All right, up next we have Midnight by Weaver of Dreams, and we have a SoundCloud for that. So, here we go.
He comes to me on silvery midnight chimes, when the dark hides the danger all around. At first as a mist, opaque, and slowly solidifies into my dark lord, who holds me spellbound. When I am no longer glamoured by his presence, at the score to settle, I ask myself, why am I waiting? Soon I must take back control, then oust this vampire, destroy him, then there'll be no more newlings. Soon it's midnight again. I see his eyes gleam, his skin glistens, his lips and tongue a delight. My body betrays me, his touch, so delicate, So knowing is where pleasure and pain ignite. My skin is on fire everywhere he's touched. He whispers, surrender to me, do not fight. I feel his sharp fangs with my tongue and shiver. I lust for the feel of warm blood from his bite. I moan softly, and his smile turns into a sneer. Trying to be strong and not scream, I hold my breath. I feel for the silver dagger hidden under the bed. Thrust it into his dark heart, bringing the final death.
Great read, Weaver. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam. Your dark soul.
All right, well, yes. Am I unmuted?
No.
Yes, I am. Oh, shush. okay. Yeah, a nice flow to the lines. I do love a good vampire story. And Weaver definitely delivers. You know, I like the dark sensuality. I see she was inspired by the prompt, pain has its reasons. Pleasure is totally indifferent. And as I was listening to this write and reading along with it, and I thought it was a wonderful take on the prompt. And I like how, to me, the whole idea of this is that, you know, of the quote being led in this direction is that it's the pain of the transformation that makes you into a new vampire. Then the pleasure is simply a side effect, not a side effect, but I don't know if that's the right word, but it is a coincidental part. You know, the vampire isn't out to bring you pleasure, but within the physical embrace, within the physical bite, you find the pleasures along with the pain. And then, you know, let's see, I liked the flow and the rhyme to this. My skin on fire, everywhere he's touched, he whispers, surrender to me, do not fight. I feel his sharp fangs with my tongue and shiver. I lust for the feel of warm blood from his bite. But I like how it takes that turn at the end and becomes about almost like that vampire hunter type vibe. I feel for the silver dagger hidden under the bed, thrust it into his dark heart, bringing the final death. I really feel like this poem stands well on its own, but it has potential to lead into a series about, you know, a vampire hunter. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Oh, thank you, Pam. I too like it for the ease on the vampire angle, as the myth, the legend, the sort of birth from Bram Stoker onward. But I also like it for the pure thought. One can look at this and see this as pure metaphor for the vampire, my dark lord, glamored. That's a great piece in there. Usually the glamour that you is attached comes with witches, but glamored also comes from sociopaths, the dark lord, the sociopath, whether it be a politician, a preacher, or a corporation that throws the glamour around. They are the dark lords offering up that glamour, and they are the vampires that suck the life's essence, sometimes blood, and the soul itself out of those who are within their realm. The thought of them, my skin is on fire everywhere he's touched. The thought of speech doesn't have to be touch. The thought of speech, the thought of sound, that which trickles down into the mind and through the body becomes that fire and surrender to me. Do not fight. Again, that angle of not just a vampire, but one of those bits I already hit on. You think of you look at the silver dagger hidden under the bed as a metaphor for how some of the biggest names and corporations are being pierced now because of what they have been doing as their type of vampire. And that brings out that final death. Once you open up to the idea of you can make a difference and you can pierce the heart of those dark lords, it is done easily, and you can do it with such a sharp twist that they fall down a long, dark path that they themselves have created. So I like the metaphorical angle on that too. Nicely done, Reva. All right, Pam, what you got?
All right. Up next we have High Horses in Quicksand, She Wears the World by Duncan Ross Bell. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read, please.
High Horses in Quicksand, She Wears the World by Duncan Ross Bell. She wears the world's dismay, a burden that she begs you for, and there's a silence in her walls, a twitch inside her stare this day. Emotion meant to sway, she fills her fists with stones. She swings those fists alone. She's standing at the finish line and wondering how to cheat. Till now, she cried at home. In a mirrored glance, she hides because she finds the face and so much more. From below and from beneath, don't believe where lonely treads. Don't deceive the slight of death, breath to live and mind to scream. Despite the changing faces, the places we've set, the choices we've met, and yet never consider. High horses in quicksand, she wears the world. Till now, she cried alone. Strength to plead, she is down on the floor. Sense of pride can support her no more. Hastily, she will reach for the door. Which mask is mommy? Which mask is fucking more? And pump. All right, Pam. Again, pain has its reasons. Jeez. I guess that was the kill drop everybody enjoyed. Pam?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were commenting.
No, I was just commenting on the fact that everybody took that quote.
Oh, that was one of the, I think, the most taken quote. It was definitely, one that is played.
We're reading
that. Yeah. No, I like the phrase high horses in quicksand, the idea of somebody who, you know, and it touches on this in the end is like how the pride cometh before the fall, you know, and you're walking around on your high horse and, you know, high horses in quicksand, she wears the world. Till now she cried alone, strength to plead. But it's interesting because there's, to me, a couple different thoughts. First of all, there's either way pride pulls you down, but there's the pride that comes from somebody who just thinks they're the shit. You know, they're God's gift to society. But then there's the pride that comes from somebody who's always done things alone and doesn't want to be a burden to other people. And I think that thought comes through in the lines, till now she cried alone, strength to plead, she is down to the floor, sense of pride can support her no more. You know, I did like the questions at the end, which mask is mommy, which mask is more. I feel like there's the idea of cutting yourself off so much from people that you no longer recognize those who you should recognize, even yourself. Let's see. Another thing I really like about this, and this is great all the way through, is the lines, she fills her fists with stones. She swings those fists alone. She's standing at the finish line and wondering how to cheat. It's interesting to me, the thought of standing at a finish line and wondering how to cheat, you know, as if, like, suddenly not aware that you've already won the race. And then, you know, the idea of throwing stones alone, to me, I think really reflects on the thought that she's throwing these stones not at somebody else, but at herself, that she's condemning herself. I really thought this was a beautiful and thoughtful write with, like, hard-hitting lines and very well done.
Okay. I'm going to go with that second line, a burden that she begs you for. So she sets herself up to be the martyr, the one who faces all the challenges, the one who gives and gives yet. She finds herself on loose footing because that high horse in quicksand means she's living a life high on the hog, but the quicksand is swallowing her because she cannot support the bullshit that she's spewing. She stands at the finish line, and the thought is not to, because she's at the finish line and winning. The thought is wondering how to cheat because she knows the next fight's going to be that much harder because she's in quicksand and because she has no real moral standing or bearing. The thought would be the back end of this, strength to plead, she is down to the floor. That implies a sense of pride can support her no more. She's lost, and she knows it. Hastily, she will reach for the door. Which mask is mommy? Which mask is fucking more? The idea of which mask is, she's put on so many masks and thoughts of that which she does not believe in, but wants to be the head of everything when it comes to being the martyr. The stone she fills her fist with hits on that thought of those who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. And yet, she swings those fists alone because, hey, she considers herself the imperial note to the righteous voice coming to life. Yes, it isn't a righteous voice, nor it is a righteous mask. It is just the thought of pride. I can be this. I can wear it all, and I can sell it as myself. Yet, in the end, she doesn't know who the hell she is anymore because she doesn't really believe in anything. And that thought to mommy, and I look at it that way because mommy instead of mother. So she's gone back to that little thought of being a girl again, where things were a whole lot different, a whole lot easier, and a whole lot more satisfying.
I like that. I could definitely see that. I had thought of it as, you know, obviously the idea that she was wondering who her mommy was, but what she was looking at, as you said, was the idea of which mask do I put on now? Put on the mask that makes me look like the perfect mother? Do I put on the mask that makes me look like the perfect, you know, I don't know, for some reason the word whore comes to mind, you know, like, and I like those observations there, Rex, and I think you've definitely made a really valid point in how oftentimes people will play the martyr not because it's in their strength of character, but because they want all the focus on them. So, very cool.
All right, where are we off to?
All right. Up next, we have Dissonance by Thomas B., and it goes like this. Ideas like children despise baths. Excitement is dirty business. Creation starts in chaos, stirs the mud, brings splendor to the ordinary. The mundane, those followers of fashion, expect life to be a car in the showroom. They spend more time polishing for others to be impressed. Even time-saving devices were born in chaos. Without patience, daydreams never become exquisite. Too much wonder is lost in the laundry. Others' olfactory delight means cleansing, the sweat soaking Michelangelo's clothes. The gleaming cities, a future purity never admits how dirty human endeavor must be. End poem.
Ray Lee Tan and Tom Cook, if you want to have clean ideas, change them as often as your shirt. And well, he did hit down that, as well as the idea of distance, that we don't actually see things. Everybody wants to be that nice little touch of, like he said here, expect life to be a car in the showroom. They spend more time polishing for others to be impressed. Boy, does that hit on the note of how pride works. And, oh, yes, I want to be seen as this, the unflappable, the unstainable, the most righteous, and the one to be viewed as perfection. Perfection doesn't exist. Things don't get done without dirt being created. Children understand that. That's why they despise baths, because what happens, you give them a bath, unless you put them in bed, they're back outside getting dirty again. It's the idea of understanding how things get created. You can create something in your mind, yes. You can put it down on paper, yes. You can submit it and have it patented, yes. But you aren't the one building it. You have to get somebody else to do that for you. Why? Because you don't work with your hands. Not in that sense. The idea of you can offer up a new way to do farming, offer up this perfect idea to a new nutrient that will not deplete the soil and will renew it each year, so it can be used without death being incurred, instead, so that the crops don't have to be offset. You know, this field gets planted this year, the next year this one does, the following year this one does. See, you've got this turnaround. Yet, if you're not working that field, you don't understand the concept, and you do not understand how things work in that building. It's like people in the city. They think, food just magically appears in grocery stores. Don't understand the concept of picking up eggs that are full of shit, because, hey, you know where they come from. They got to be washed. They got to be cleaned. They got to be bleached. They got to go through all this processing before they get to your table, clean, white embryos ready to be cracked and eaten. Just like they don't understand how everything else gets in. The furniture gets made. It doesn't get made in the big cities. All that stuff occurs in the rurality of the country itself. Yes, we understand. We know. We are the polished ones. No, you're not. You might be polished, but you're not polished to the point where you can actually support yourself if it came to that. So I like that thought. Nicely done, Tom. All right, Pam, what you got?
Yeah, I have to agree. I do like the thoughts that he's put into this. I really like where he says the mundane, those followers of fashion expect life to be a car in the showroom. They can spend more time polishing for others to be impressed. The idea of people not living life to the fullest. That everything that you do isn't so that you can grow as a person, but rather to show off, like that whole keeping up with the Joneses idea. I also really liked where he mentioned, well, it's great right all the way through, but the too much wonder is lost in the laundry. Others olfactory delight means cleansing, the sweat soaked Michelangelo's clothes. And to me, that really touches well on the working man and woman, the ones who are out there making the world, making the city and the towns a better place, fixing the machines and the mechanics, the hard workers of this world who get dirty, who come home from work covered with grease and dirt and sweat and get judged for who they are. And yet, that's how we all should be living life, is to a certain extent of being willing to really get in the dirt, so really just an excellent write and very well done.
All right, where are we going?
All right. Up next, we have Level of Delusion by Daniel Dischino. And Rex, go ahead, give that a read for us, please.
From Dissonance to Delusion. Damn. Level of Delusion by Daniel Dischino. Psychosis starts at birth. As eyes awake, eyes will intake. And I have seen everything that I have seen as it immediately dissipates into scattered, opaque dreams of remembrance, questionable as the years bring doubt. I just remember some little bits needed for mental survival, and now I awake each day in full delusion through fisheries, zoos, markets, as schools, office buildings, hospitals. I think of each human life and realize I am myself, one of them, and what must be taken for me to be me. And I think before taking the extra serving of food, and I turn off my air conditioning when the night is cool, and I wonder if the difference between powerful and powerless is just the level of delusion. End poem. And Dan took, let us never forget that the greatest man is never more than an animal disguised as a god. All right, Pam, what you got?
Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. That first line, oh my goodness, that is really an attention-grabbing line that makes you think right out of the gate. Psychosis starts at birth. The idea of being deaf, it's interesting because it really kind of, to me, reflects on the idea of, does the mind, does the spirit go mad because of what we go through? Or would it be that no matter what you go through, you're destined from birth to become insane? I like the first person narrative in such lines as, I just remember some little bits needed for mental survival, and now I awake each day in full delusion. I really like how this reflects on the thought of what's needed to survive emotionally when the mind is falling apart. And I wonder if the difference between powerful and powerless is just the level of delusion. Very philosophical, as oftentimes his poetry is, in the idea that if you know how truly powerless you are, you're more grounded in reality than if you see yourself as all powerful. I like that he takes us into the fisheries, into the zoo market, and then into the school offices and buildings and hospitals and where people are all caged together, living this life of delusions. So just a wonderful, thoughtful write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Yeah, you're right. That opening line is a kicker to get into the meat and potatoes of the piece itself. But it hits me with the thought, psychosis starts at birth. There are some doctors, well, some theorists now, who do acknowledge the fact that some, especially serial killers who have no, who are totally apathetic, they do contain a gene or at least a separation of a part of a gene that most of the rest of us do have. And that might be a start with birth, but then again, yeah, it would have to actually. If they're short of something, it would start with birth. But then again, how many of those who would have turned into psychopaths weren't because of the parents they had? And how many became those psychopaths despite the parents they had? So the idea, and also kind of points at the thought of, have we been breeding for the last couple of generations a series of psychopaths because of the ingestion that knows of, hey, this is wrong, so you need this. We found this, so you need this. The idea, the intake, not just the eyeball intake, but the intake of all these drugs that nobody really has any idea what consequence it has on the body and the system itself, especially in youth, where you can actually turn someone who's right there at normality, but turn them into something other than what they would normally have been if you hadn't fed them all these drugs over the years to begin with. Now, the thought with the fishery, through fisheries, zoos, markets, schools, office buildings, hospitals. Yeah, there is that idea to cage animals, but there is that idea of the forceage, the thought of schools and office buildings being those arenas where things get born, things get expounded upon. Hospitals, hey, that's where everybody ends up eventually. And there is a philosophical note to this, yes. But the thought, the last two, and I think before taking the extra serving of food and I turn off my air conditioning when the night is cool, and I wonder if the difference between powerful and powerless is just the level of delusion, that kind of walks on the notion of life being a construct. And if you walk within that construct, the fact that he's actually thinking about that extra serving of food and turning off the AC when the night is cool is often a thought of that. Walking outside that norm where everybody, hey, I'm going to keep the AC down to 65. That's where I like my world. And that kind of sits on the notion that you don't ever want to walk outside that world to begin with to see what is on the other side. All right, where are we going next?
Up next, we have A Witch's Bagatelle number 3 by Jack Blue. And it goes like this. How have you been these days, my jury donkey king, with the crazy crown between your soaring ears and the amphitheater made of foggy fantasies? Laugh away, Fortissimo, with a million mice or so, and two able feline nurse to the empty universe when your fine philosophy mingles with a braying spree. Stand, my drunken donkey, with dizzy okie-dokie, so you might remember how the soil of wonder twinkled to infinity on the earthly memory. End poem.
Gregory Pam and Jack Took. Let us never forget that the greatest man is never more than an animal disguised as a god. I like this one, just on the thought of offering up the, not just the animal disguised as a god, but the animal disguised as the fool. The joke of the arts, so to speak. Think of the braying spree, when your fine philosophy mingles with the braying spree. Ooh. And this is what, how have you been these days, my dreamy donkey king? Again, hits at the thought of the ass up front with the crazy crown in the amphitheater made of foggy fantasy. That bites at someone who's totally deluded into the thought that, hey, I am master of everything, so to speak, I'm the king of the hill. And you might be in that world where you own enough to say that you've hit the peak of subsistence, so to speak. And but the back end of this, laugh away fortissimo with a million mice or so and an able feline nurse to empty the universe when your fine philosophy mingles with a braying spree. And that is, you think you're smart enough to offer up your philosophy. And the idea that everybody else is the braying spree while you yourself are the ass king. So what does that say of you when it comes to the mingling of that philosophy with the rest of those you consider asses when you yourself are the ass? And then that back end, I stand my drunken donkey. Kind of the delusion of being drinking your own Kool-Aid. And then remember the soil of wonder, that which got you to where you were in, to where you are now in the first place, because they don't start out as these big king things, wealthy and all that. They have to start out with the on the bottom end for most part, twinkle to infinity on the earthly memory, because the bottom end, back end of this, hits on the thought, hey, you're going to die too, and most people won't even remember you. All right, what you got?
Yeah, I really liked your observation, especially how people don't remember the roots of where they came from. I really like this all the way through, but I especially like that he opens with the question, "How have you been these days, my dreamy donkey king?" I don't know. There's something very almost. It's interesting to me about Jack's style, especially in this poem, is how it's both straightforward and surrealistic at the same time. Especially in lines like "Laugh away fortissimo with a million mice or so and an able feline nurse to the empty universe, when your fine philosophy mingles with a braying spree." I think there's a certain type of irony, a certain type of humor, and with a million mice or so and an able feline nurse, because if you I think about the idea of a cat nurse in a world filled with a million mice, and how I guess to me it brings the thought, the idea of how we think those who have our best interest in mind really only have their appetite in mind. So just excellent write and very well done.
All right, where we go next?
All right, that is a good question. Let me see. All right. And next we have "Please with a Cherry on Top" by Team Michelle. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read, please.
"Please with a Cherry on Top" by Team Michelle. And you know, dear, no one understands why the evening plucks an elusive rain, softly landing on a white scarlet lash from its own toil and sensitivity, or the way novels spin out of one small gaze and an irregular heartbeat belatedly reunites with the scent of candied bourbon, love, the hand-me-down good kind born of man and immortality has caved in like a badly baked cake, piped with cherries around its top as the feeble fruit of bliss. I couldn't bear them, see within caresses of my deep tissue knots, releasing that blush in a secluded cottage furnished with shell crust scars of personhood. So I lied that there isn't a man like those pressed cherries, red of lips and pure of eyes, same as a cork tightly stuffed over liquid poison. From the sharp curves of your brows and toe, You couldn't bear this news either. It becomes a battle of muses. Yours, telltale marks and corey trees in a cheese-stained courtyard. Mine, a new garden feature where there used to be mire and lazy lilac bandeaus. So for all the wrong reasons, I wish that this one night was enough for us. End poem. And, again, pain has its reasons. Pleasure is totally indifferent. All right. Where you want to go with that one?
What was that?
Where are you going to go with that one?
Oh, geez. Who knows? Probably around in circles. You know, as always, T. Michelle does a wonderful job with imagery and metaphors. And I think for me, the general idea that I get from this, is covering up the bad stuff, and acting like we don't see the cover up, especially in lines like, where was that? This, like a badly baked cake piped with cherries around its top as the feeble fruit of bliss. I couldn't bear them. That makes me think of when you see like cooking shows and they're like, okay, if you mess up your cake, here's what you do with it, you know, like, and here's ways you can cover it up. But on, you know, and that works really well as a metaphor because oftentimes it's like, okay, when you've screwed up your life, when you've screwed up relationships, here's the things you can do to cover them up, you know. And I really also liked the imagery in safe as a cork tightly stuffed over liquid poison from the sharp curves of your brows and toe. You couldn't bear this news either. It became a battle of muses, your telltale marks on kauri trees and a cheese-stained courtyard. I feel like this is about that kind of love that eternally scars us, that eternally stains us. And so for all the wrong reasons, I wish that this one night was enough for us. I like that line because I feel like it speaks on the whole idea of how over time there's nothing as beautiful as that one night where you truly connected with somebody and all the rest of it is just, you know, a constant idea of putting the makeup across the frown lines. So beautifully written and very well done.
Well, thank you, Ben. This is a three-parter. This opened up to love, and then the hand-me-down good kind. Now that's the thing that Hollywood sells ad lib. What the billboards sell you, and this, that, and everything else. Then you got the second part. Born of man and immortality has caved in like a badly baked cake, piped with cherries around its top as the feeble fruit of bliss. There's that note to things aren't as simple as that Hollywood perfection or the billboard notes to. This is what everything boils down to. And then the back end, the whole thought of being sold that the secluded cottage furnished with a shell crushed scars of person. So I lied that there isn't a man like those crushed cherries, red of lips and pure of eyes, sex the cork tightly stuffed over liquid poison. Ooh, there's a sharp note there. Then it's the thought in denying that existence. And then the back end is the finish, the thought between the two, the opposites, the telltale marks and corey trees in a cheese-stained courtyard. That life that he wants or she wants, and then the mine angle, a new garden feature where there used to be a mire and lazy lilac bandeaus. So for all the wrong reasons, I wish that this one night was enough for us. that does point to a singularity as a note to one-night stands, so to speak, but it also paints the picture from the back end, those with yours and mine angle, is they've spent so much time together that they noticed that which is embedded within them, that which is baked within their own particular cakes, the difference, and they find no common ground. He wants that cheese-stained courtyard, the thoughts of the trees being marked. He likes that touch, or she likes that touch of something a melt, something scarred. The back angle of the new garden feature in place of that mire and lazy lilac bandeaus is that idea of getting rid of the bog and the prickly thoughts of that which might look good but smells like shit, and even if you walk through it, you're only going to get cut up. So the new garden feature is going to be, hey, you know what? Maybe it's time for us to move on, because we clearly don't have a thing in common. And that thought with a please, with a cherry on top, offers up that notion. It's a begging for an ideal that doesn't exist. All right.
All right. Up next, we have Something Else Batters by Bryce Allen Moniz. And it goes like this. Corn dogs in my repertoire, French toast made much more fancier, but never tried caviar and something else batters. Pressure cooking techniques amaze, full of fuss, fat fish filleted. Backyards, birds look betrayed, and something else batters. Ribeye, Greek, Adam sets the mood. Easy Eve, I make soulful food. Get behind eggs, devil too, and something else batters. Flavorful favorites fuse, savory heavenly rolls, cooling glow. Rump roast, rate, gold star, sliced zucchini, loved hot, a frozen stick of butterscotch, and something else batters. Caramelizing goo, hazard heart, aching goals, cooling blow. Clever cabbage meets pumpkin cake, semi-raw, juicy thick steaks. Hey, neighborhood, I'm all the rage, and something else batters. Tasty sheep, crispy kangaroo that we all went through. Wonder bar that we barbecue, and something else matters, and something else batters. Never ate a sugar snake, never ate a pearly grape. Never ate a baby you, never ate a mama doe albino, yeah. Tacos enamored, gluttony, gluttony happier, ketchup chips caviate, and something else batters, and something else batters, and poem.
Great read, Pam, and he took good taste is as tiring as good company, and you should recognize this piece.
I did. Well, besides the fact that he put it in the title, I did recognize it, yes. Yes, there was a parody of nothing. Yeah. Yep, of Nothing Else Matters.
It does work as a pretty good thought to the song itself, but done in a really odd way, especially considering the thought. Corn dogs in my repertoire, French toast much, made much more fancier, rump roast, raised gold star, sliced with zucchini, I love it, a frozen stick of butterscotch, but the really good ones were never ate a sugar snake, never ate a pearly grape, never ate a baby you, never ate a mama doe albino, I like that, and ketchup chips caviar, wow, ketchup on chips, okay. It does offer up quite the full volume of taste bud awareness. I mean, damn. Caviar, fat fish, deviled eggs, heavenly rolls. Let's see. Clever cabbage meets pumpkin cake. I'm not sure I'm going to go that route. But I like the thought. Tasty sheep, crispy kangaroo. I don't like the sheep, but I might like the kangaroo. Wonderbar, then we barbecue, and something else battered. I like the thought. Hey, everything tastes good when you batter it. At least that's the general impression people get. All right, since it's out of your musical wheelhouse, Metallica, what about you?
Well, it was a wonderful parody, and did I have a singing voice to pull it off? I would have tried, but, you know, I too really liked the part about never tried, all the different things, like never tried a sugar snake, never ate a pearly gate, never ate a baby ewe. I also like that, he brings up the tasty sheep, crispy kangaroo, just a phase that we all went through. There's two thoughts. I love the humor in this because, like most good parodies, and there are exceptions, but most good parodies throw in a dash or a few of humor. The two thoughts that come to my mind with this is, one, it makes me think of how people, like you hear about people trying unusual foods almost like as a social status, like all the different cool things they've tried and all the different things they, want to try. And really almost it having a competitive edge. The other thing this makes me think of is the fair. And that's because, like, with the repetitiveness and something else batters. And you had brought this up with the, the a frozen stick of butterscotch. I mean, they're like the things that they will batter and fry at a fair. It is just absolutely to the point of ridiculousness and nauseating. So, but just absolutely a clever parody and very well done.
Well, there is a note to the battering. There's a ton of things. Well, corn dogs was a note to offering up something a little bit different rather than a standard hot dog on a bun. You put it on a stick, you batter it, and you fry it. Easy peasy that way. But there are plenty of other things that work well. You look at tempura shrimp, great flavor. Without being thick with batter, it's light, it's airy, and it's great for dipping. Batter frozen cheesecake, yummy. If you haven't tried it, it's a must. But not everything is worth battering. I mean, fried chicken, there is a note to you can do a little bit of battering there, but you got to beware because it can easily burn, too, if you're not paying attention. And
yes.
I wouldn't batter a steak, not on any stretch of the imagination. That's just a waste of good meat. You look at the funnel cakes, or just batter drizzled into a fryer and make funnel.
Oh, yum. Those are good.
There are other things stuffed jalapeno poppers. That's relatively over the last 25 years, and that's grown a bit. And it's a great way of introducing a jalapeno peppers with a little cool bite within to offer up past the heat. So there are a multitude of foods that work well with batters and some that you shouldn't ever go there with.
That is for sure. That is for sure. And great show tonight, Rex.
And that was actually a nice finishing note, having that everything batters. So something else batters. It was a good finishing note for that. But yeah, that was a bit different. And
was,
I think that,
I
was the, that was the one right with a quote. That was the only right on that quote.
You know what? I thought somebody else wrote on that, but I guess not.
No.
It was a great
one. I would remember that because that's the first one I read. Good taste is as tiring as good company. Nobody else wrote to that.
Huh. Wow. Well, there you go. He picked something different. Oh, wait, no, Verses. Didn't Verses write on that? Okay, well, I'm not going to. But, but anyway, yeah, that one definitely.
Verses?
Huh.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
Well.
Huh, where is it?
Maybe not.
Oh, actually, you're right. Yeah, that was. That's why I didn't remember. That was, we opened the show pretty much with Verses. So yeah.
Exactly. Well, yeah, and you know, it's always fun to see how people take the same prompt in totally different ways. Well, now, I know we're off the air, but in case people listen to the show all the way through, what did you want to mention your upcoming Sunday show?
Oh, yes. The Storytelling of Todd Snyder. He's very much kind of like the minstrel. He tells a lot of stories in his songs. Some of them are hard. Some of them are funny as hell. I've got a few songs up. And if you know Todd Snyder, and you don't see one that you like, pick one of his other songs. So the audiences love him when he gets on stage. So there's a few live versions in there that you can listen to, and you'll see how the audience gets into him because they like his storytelling. And he offers up the thought, well, what I do tonight, I go across another state, and sing it a different way. Then I come back here a few weeks later, you might not hear the same tale, the same story. So I'll apologize up front, he says.
I like that. And I haven't listened to the video yet, but I have been reading the lyrics. And I have to say, very impressive storytelling and great choice there, Rex. The only thing I'm going to mention is that I do have two contests that I need rights for, but I'm particularly looking for rights for Naomi, and I need rights for Wednesday's show, The Art of Seduction. I have a contest open titled Imagination and Curiosity with a variety of quotes as prompts.
Okay.
So, you know, if anybody feels like whipping out the sensual pen. And, all right, well, great show tonight, Rex.
Yep, thank you. And do this again next Tuesday.